Oi, mate, there's a shark in the water the size of a nuclear submarine. These two get are hammering on about whether or not it's a bloody kaiju. So sit back in your chair, lovely, have a nice cuppa, and let the mechanic solve this kaiju crisis. This is Kaiju versus History. The Meg.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your Beats, Bears, and Battlestar Galactica loving billionaire, Miles. And joining me is the mechanic, the beekeeper, the transporter himself, who hopefully will never talk like that again, Patrick.
What if I did the entire episode like that, lovely?
Then you'll be doing the entire episode by yourself, friend.
Oi! Settle down now.
I love Jason Statham.
He is very easy to make fun of, though.
I love Jason Statham. We were before recording, we were just talking about The Beekeeper, which we had both seen. Patrick was not less enthusiastic about that as I was, but I love that movie. I mean, and I was excited when he was cast as Jonas Taylor.
Did you? I just realized it, like, looking at the spelling, but Jonas is just Jason rearranged. It's the same letters in Jason.
It is, but it's also the character from the books. So what I wanted to ask you,
I just think it's funny. It is.
Did you read the books ever?
I feel like in high school I did, because it came out in the 80s or the 90s. I forget.
Came on the 90s. It came out like in the mid, I want to say like 96 or 7.
Yeah, 7, so that was like straight up in high school. And this is it. Yeah, so The Meg is based on just Meg, a novel of deep terror, which is the first book by Steve Alton. Is that right? I think I read that somewhere.
Yes.
But, which is pretty crazy. It's you know, very successful first novel.
So I remember when this book came out. I remember begging my mom to, because I would have been about 14, I think. Mm-hmm. And getting this book, because I remember the buzz about it, and it was like, you know, kind of being pitched like, oh, imagine Jaws, but imagine like something Jaws the size of a school bus, mm-hmm. you know, and so I was so excited. I think we got it from like a Sam's Club, because they were like, you know, on super sale. They weren't $30. They were like 15. And getting this hardcover and absolutely devouring it, like in sixth or seventh grade or whatever. And sure. I never read the sequels, but I really loved that first book when it came out.
Yeah, yeah. There's some ingenious kind of science sci-fi stuff in there that isn't really in this movie. This movie is maybe a little dumbed down version of the book, but
and even this book is kind of a, you know, a lot of people loved, like, a lot of the advertising at the time was like Jurassic Shark, and
yes,
I will say Alton's stuff is not as scientifically written, or as the science is not as interesting or sound as a Michael Crichton book, mm-hmm. but it's still so dang fun.
Well, once again, Steve Alton's first book, and he wasn't like super old. He was like in his 20s, I think, when this book came out. Or
he was born in 59, so he would have been pushing 30, almost 27,
60. Yeah, so I mean, this is still pretty impressive. And
my math is entirely wrong. 37.
97 minus 59. We can do this, Miles. We can't.
That's why we're not a math podcast.
Yeah. So he was probably 38 year old or so, somewhere in there, when the book was published. But once again, for his first book, I feel like it is.
Oh yeah, no, it's. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It honestly still holds up. I think I reread it, or parts of it, I want to say about 6 or 7 years ago. And again, I hadn't touched it since I was probably a teenager. And this is a movie, before we get into what's in the title, this is a movie that I remember being kind of in development hell since the book came out. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I remember reading magazine trades and stuff of the possibility of a Meg adaptation for about 20 years.
Yes. I mean, supposedly the rights for it were sold before
even the book came out. At least this article from Wired, the 20-year journey of the Meg, the movie the internet wouldn't let die. Supposedly that's what this article says is indeed. They initially sold the rights and they reverted back to Altman because they just didn't follow through with a film within like 5 years or whatever that contract was. And it got punted around Hollywood a whole bunch before. Well, eventually, the LA Times reported that Jan de Bont was attached as director at one point.
Which would have been awesome, like as a follow-up to Twister.
Oh, yeah. Guillermo del Toro was attached as a producer. Shane Salerno attached as a screenwriter. And Salerno, you might know from... He's worked with a lot of folks, but the Avatar movies as very recently... And maybe not recently, the Alien versus Predator films. I think he worked on writing maybe the second one, the real bad one.
Mm.
But yeah, this movie eventually did land at WB in 2015 with a few different directors before John Turteltaub got the job. Miles, are you ready to talk about The Meg, the movie?
Yeah, but before, Patrick, tell us what's in the title.
Well... thankfully, The Meg, kind of a terrible title because...
Oh, it's a great title.
Well, it doesn't translate, I don't book, think. At least. Oh, yeah, it's great for a book. It doesn't translate super well into other countries because shortening of Megalodon doesn't work exactly the same and doesn't...
Oh, right.
So, a lot of countries got the film with a subtitle, and I'll go through some of those first. In Croatia, it was Meg, Monster from the Deep. So very close to the book's name, the novel of deep terror. Greece has The Ruler of the Deep. Hungary, Meg, the Prehistoric Shark. Megalon, A Threat from the Depths in Lithuania. Meg, Confrontation in the Depths. And let's see, Menace from the Deep, Terror of the Deep. There's a whole bunch of those. What else? In Japan, it was just called Meg, the Monster. In Italy... Shark, the first shark, or like the Il Primo's squalo, the first shark. Are there any other ones that were real good?
Vietnam is pretty great.
Oh, yes. I have this one in bold because I'll save that one. In France, this was just called In Troubled Waters, which is kind of cool. Kind of makes it sound
like that.
Kind of makes it sound like an art film, In Troubled Waters. But no, Vietnam, Ca Mop Si Bao Cheo is... translates out to Super Tyrant Shark, which is metal yeah, as hell.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, I was hoping there was going to be more weird ones like that, but it's odd for such a large Hollywood release not to homogenize the film in other countries. But I guess there's not really like a real brand awareness around Megalodon or Meg.
Well, it's weird because I mean the book was a big hit.
Mm.
So I guess yes, they,
which is probably
the
problem why they was that kept it.
Yeah, it was a big hit 20 years prior. And, oh, yeah. You know, while the other books have, you know, probably been diminishing returns and still sold, I can see why they wanted to keep like the IP. But at the same time, I can see why, like, yeah, it probably is not working quite as well. I mean, by the time the movie comes out, we're on like book number 5. And I think there's been a side series about the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, called The Loch.
Which has crossed over into the Meg series as well.
And Loch Ness Monster versus Megalodon. Let's get that movie going.
I don't know if there's a fight between the two, but there better be.
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I will say spoilers for the Meg film got a sequel called is it called The Meg 2 or is it just called The Meg, The Trench?
Meg to the Trench, which is the trench Meg is the name of the sequel of Meg.
Yeah, so there's some more tie-ins with the book and the film. The film does not have a lot to do with the film. The film doesn't have a lot to do with the book, I guess. But
yeah, the plots are
pretty
different. Similar. But in terms of what's actually going on, like the beginning of the first, the beginning of the book is similar in some capacity to the beginning of the book or the movie, but it's just, it's done differently. Like there is a situation where Jonas does leave people behind to die, fleeing what he believes is a giant shark, like a prehistoric shark. And of course, no one believes him until they do.
It comes back,
which is how, like in the first one, he's like a Navy diver or something. And here he's like a rescue diver.
Yeah. But you know what? It's like, it doesn't make a ton of sense because they talk about how the Meg can't leave the trench, you know, like where did that Meg come from that attacked the submarine?
So, because the submarine was, I think, I actually don't know.
No, I don't think
I think because it had fought it like malfunctioned and fell to where they were going because they mentioned how no one had been that deep since Jonas.
Yeah, but I don't think it had gone past the thermal climb, to use the parlance of the movie, because they're like, all right, this is the first time anyone's ever been down here, like, you know, a few years later.
They say that, but then they're like, but I know one man, like, you know, so it's like, the answer is who cares?
just add one to the Cinema Sins column, baby.
No, I don't support Cinema Sins.
This film is very different because this is a real true U.S. China co-production for Warner Brothers and Perfect World Pictures, who co-produced the film. And, you know, we just had a very similar situation with the last Pacific Rim film, Pacific Rim Uprising, which also had kind of a Chinese co-production. And studios around this time in like the mid 2010s were just taking a lot more Chinese investments into films and kind of opening up the Chinese market, especially to Western films. And it's weird. It came in a few different waves, like the Marvel movies. There were a ton of the Marvel movies that came out around that time that had added scenes for Chinese markets. So they would throw in like one of the up and coming like actors in China at the time in a very short scene with like Tony Stark, because I think like Iron Man 2 had like a famous Chinese actress who just like met Tony at a party or something like that. It wasn't like a ton, but films like this are true co-productions, in that there was a lot of Chinese in Pacific Rim Uprising. There's a lot less in this movie. But
not even Marvel Studios, like Fan Bing Bing was cast as Blink in Days of Future Past in 2014.
Yep.
And so I think she had more scenes in the cut, which I think was integrated into the Rogue cut of that film. Mm-hmm. Because I remember I was a big fan of her. And then like recently she got in big trouble because of this tax evasion scandal that she was part of.
Well, it's a good and a bad thing. China, oh boy, they're pretty mercurial in a lot of things. And spoiler warnings.
Oh, no, she was like blacklisted in China for it. Like it was a tax evasion scandal that was like in China, not here. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of the reasons that like a lot of these studios were trying to like do this was because like China only lets or at the time X amount of foreign films to be shown in their theaters. Is that still the case, or is that my correct?
For wide release, they have a state control of the like, you know, vast majority of theaters. So they let in like, it used to be like 10.
Yeah, it used to be really small. Films. I think it's grown a little bit.
Yes. And it depends, you know, if there's some grease in the backs probably, or grease in a palm.
Well, and the reason that this is so sought after is because with a country with such a dense population, you can also inject movies with a lot of additional cash with not as much like investment. And sometimes that kind of saves your movie. I mean, Warcraft is the first one that comes to mind, where like it made like $100 million in Japan alone.
Yeah, so that's a good example of one, because that is, I mean, if they made a StarCraft movie, it'd probably be the same thing. And I mean, almost all of these kind of like big budget films make, you know, obviously much more worldwide than they do domestically just here in the United States. I mean, that's, you know, like releasing in 100 countries versus one. But there are some films that it really kind of, like World of Warcraft, would have failed completely if it weren't for the international market. This movie definitely needed a pretty big support from an international market, as did Pacific Rim Uprising. Pacific Rim Uprising, I think, was profitable, if memory serves. And it's that's mostly because of China, of Eastern people buying tickets. I love Chinese audiences if they love kaiju movies as much as I do, you know, if they're going into these films.
Well, they do, but like we've kind of like had to kind of calm ourselves because they do have several kaiju movies, but it's murky out there in them. Yes. Kaiju waters.
Oh, we're gonna talk about some Chinese kaiju films that are on our list. But yeah, we're talking about The Meg this week. Talking about The Meg. I enjoyed this movie a lot when I first saw it, and I don't know when that was. It was definitely not in theaters. Did you happen to see this in theaters, Miles?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. One, so you know my fiance, and I should know, she loves sharks and loves mm-hmm. shark movies. Not only that, but I mean, yes, I was a big fan of this book. Despite not reading the sequels, and had been waiting for this movie for 2 decades. So I mean, even though it didn't sound like it was going to be the movie that I wanted it to be, because it is very different in that, like, there's no like billionaire backing of this big research facility kind of thing going on. This is more old school than that in terms of the actual plot of the book, but there are a lot of similarities in certain parts. I think I went to the first showing on the first day it came out. Like I we were there like day one.
I feel like this, you know, we talked about it with Rampage. What else? I mean, these two movies, especially, these are films to see on the big screen. They are made for munching popcorn.
Oh, it's a giant prehistoric shark. Like, what do you want?
2018
Shakespeare had, and the Shark.
Well, 2018 had Pacific Rim Uprising, Rampage, and The Meg within like 6 months. And yeah, I could have seen myself going to all three of them. I did not go to any of them in theaters and just having a good time, because that's what they are. They're these spectacle films. And to be honest, they don't hold up as well, I think, on the small screen. But I enjoyed my first time watching
this. Just a bigger TV.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoyed my first time watching this a good deal. And then, you know, if you watch it a whole bunch, I feel like you kind of start to pick it apart a little bit. But
so you want, another thing to keep in mind is the shark movie was getting somewhat of a box office resurgence with The Shallows and 47 Meters Down becoming indie sleeper hits, because initially I think 47 Meters Down was going to be a direct to VOD release. And after The Shallows became this modest hit, they held off. And 47 Meters Down was a pretty big hit and got a mm-hmm. sequel. Actually, is getting another sequel. So you saw this surge in actual shark movies that weren't like kaiju movies. But and I mean, of course, you've always had the, you know, the sci-fi channel, the ghost shark, volcano sharks, all that nonsense. But for actual shark movies, I mean, there's been quite a big resurgence of those over the last decade.
Well, I will say I remember borrowing the book for The Meg from the library, and I feel like some of the quotes on the back were Jaws related. You know, it's like, what if
100%
Jaws was 100 times larger, or, you know, whatever like that. This definitely feels probably closer to a Jaws sequel than it does a kaiju movie in parts, but there's still some, you know, fun kind of sci-fi elements to like this whole underwater ocean area, and the little submersibles that the team has. They're pretty, honestly, they look like the spaceships from Attack of the Clones that the Jedi have.
the Jedi Starfighters.
Yeah, they look great. I love them.
Yeah. So that is a little bit of a thing. So like, yes, a lot of, and one of the reasons that I wanted to get the book was like, yes, this is like, you know, an amped up Jaws. And why I was excited for people like Jon Dubont and Del Toro to get involved is because they would kind of keep some of that element of horror that is in the book. In the same vein, when I say horror, I don't mean horror in like Michael Myers, but some of that kind of genuine creature feature terror that you would have gotten like from the first Jurassic Park movie, you know, where it's a genuine thrill ride. And this is very much a thrill ride in a different way, but it feels more like you're on a theme park coaster, which is not a bad thing. But I think that so to kind of the reason I was talking about the prior directors is John Turtletaub is the director of more lighter fare and movies that I like. Obviously, I'm going to go to bat Three Ninjas and Cool Runnings every day of the week. But in terms of like,
I didn't know he directed that.
Oh, let me give you some of it. He did Three Ninjas, Cool Runnings, and then While You Were Sleeping, the Bill Pullman, Sandra Bullock rom-com, which is fantastic if you haven't seen it. The Kid, the baseball movie from, I think it's a baseball movie. With Bruce Willis, the Disney movie. But then he did National Treasure. And I think this is what kind of got him the job is he did the two National Treasure movies. And this feels like a National Treasure type of movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a great action film minus I have like one major bone to pick with kind of like the pacing of the film.
The pacing's weird. I do think that they really miss an opportunity to play with the shark. And I think that's the biggest problem this movie has is like the shark is there as some spectacle, but it's you never feel it as like they don't treat it as seriously, I think. And I think they didn't really show the shark as much as they should have in some sequences.
No, I mean, there's a healthy amount of like not showing the creature in the first act, which I appreciate because they really don't until they get to the hunting sequence. But they hunt and kill a megalodon in the movie. And that gets us to the hour and 30 minute mark. And I was like, wow, I don't remember the movie being this short. And I looked at the runtime and there's another like 40 minutes of the film. I was like, oh, right. And there's of course, there's a second Meg, which is like exactly what happened in the Godzilla Planet of the Monsters movie. But the third act is ostensibly the best part.
For sure.
It's the actual chaos at the beach and where we film in, I think, China,
which sucks because like the chaos of the beach is much more visceral and fun in the book. I think I know there was a poster, but I believe there is a sequence where there is literally someone on a surfboard trying to outrun the Meg on a wave in the book.
The poor guy in the Zorby or whatever it is, the inflatable ball running people down.
So great. And, in the book, that's how they kill the first Meg. In the Mariana Trench, and that's how the second Meg gets to surface. It's bit onto its mate, and the blood is warming it as it's coming out of that kind of like cold part of the sea, and it's pulled up basically, and that's how the Meg gets to the surface in this one. Not doesn't get through some like weird like, oh yeah, we're just gonna follow this submarine. It's a little bit different. I think there's a good dose of, I think, tension and terror missing that's replaced by more thrill ride and crowd pleasing kind of popcorn munching. It's not a bad thing. It's just not the choices I would have made.
No, the second is definitely goes further in that extreme. Well, yeah, all the Meg sequences happen at night because it's like a nocturnal predator. So it's a very horror movie vibe there. And we get some sequences like the Meg coming up to the giant underwater Jaws 3 style, like glass sequence beneath the oil platform or wherever they have the science lab.
That sequence with thing is, I think, one of the best in the entire movie.
Yeah, they just don't do a lot with it. And yeah, then they're just on the boat for like the next half hour. And there's some good parts there, but that is probably the weakest part of the movie. I like it when they're subs and hunting the Meg. It's much more fun.
Speaking of Meging, Sophia Kai as the Inn, who is like kind of the co-lead of the film, the 8-year-old girl is like one of the best parts of this entire movie. She is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, she's adorable. They
when she does the little raised casting. Eyebrows to Jonas about her mom. Like when she does like the kind of Kevin McAllister.
Uh-huh.
I know this is an audio podcast, no one can see me do that, but I thought she was one of the best characters in the movie. Yeah. I agree. I think if a lot of this was at night and kind of followed some of the kills from the book, we could have evened out. I mean, they were really also kind of they were going for that PG-13 rating. They weren't going for like a they wanted a summer guaranteed hit, and mm-hmm. they were not going to make a gory shark movie, which I think kind of holds this movie back a little bit, because people are paying their tickets to see a shark munch on people.
We get to see Rainn Wilson's hand bit off towards the end, but yeah, there's not a ton of blood and guts, and I don't know if there normally would be, because the jaws are so big, it's swallowing people.
No, I mean, something there would be, but like, I mean, at the same time, like them creatures like to do some crunching, you know. And certainly in the book it does some crunching, and I feel like it missed its opportunity to be a little bit more of a horror movie. I think this movie would have been more of a success creatively if it had stuck to some of the book's more horror roots. That's not to say this movie is not an absolute thrill ride and a blast, but I do think it has some pacing problems.
Mm-hmm. The you mentioned Su Ying, is that the mm-hmm. Su Yen is played by Li Bingbing in this film, and
it was great.
She's great. Yeah, her father is also good, played by Winston Chow. He is an American actor. No, he's not. But there's actually a great kind of like secondary cast besides Rainn Wilson, who we mentioned. Ruby Rose is in the movie.
Mm-hmm. This is Jax.
Our comic relief comes from Paige Kennedy, who's like one of the techs. And we get a short amount of time with Masioka, who most people will know as a hero from the show Heroes. But he dies pretty early on in the movie, he's
great. And then Cliff Curtis, who, I mean, recently most people probably know him as Travis from Fear the Walking Dead.
Right.
He's been in a bunch of stuff though, so it's not his only thing. But like, yeah, he's one of those actors that you've seen in so many things.
It's a very solid cast and a pretty good mix of the Chinese family, which is kind of at the core, and then like a bunch of scientists and kind of adventurers.
You have Jason Statham, who is known for his martial arts and doesn't get to karate chop a shark.
he has a kick at the end. He kicks like a big old spike into the Meg's eye.
I know, but look, I'm used to seeing this man like do like some crazy stunts or threaten Vin Diesel.
I feel like
getting dispatched with the Rock.
He has a little more stuff in the second movie. It's been a while since I've seen the second movie.
I think he does. Well, but there's also more things for him to kick and punch.
Yes, there's more monsters in that movie. Yeah, this movie did pretty darn well. Yeah. It was estimated that it needed, its budget was pretty big. It was upwards of around $150 million. And then if you're counting in international kind of marketing and things like that, it was estimated it needed to make over 400 million to break even, and it did 529 both domestically and internationally kind of combined. So it made money, it did very well, made $500 million. And yeah, they were talking immediately about a sequel, but it would not come for 5 years. Probably most of that 5-year delay was, you know, COVID happened kind of like in the middle of it. And I feel like that put a big old pause on a ton of stuff. But yeah, this movie did not do well with critics, but I think it was pretty well liked by audiences.
Yeah, a lot of people had a really good time with this. I mean, this is a perfect summer movie. This is what you know, to beat the heat, you go watch a movie about a giant shark. And I mean, mm-hmm. It was released in the exact, ooh. I mean, August. It's the perfect time for a movie like this.
oh, no. Critics and audiences thought about the same thing. 47% critics, 44% audience score. Not great.
Not great, but at the same time, like, I mean, enough people went and saw it, so someone enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, let's
think. Someone named me.
Did commercially well, so yes, we do get the sequel in 2023? The second film?
Yeah, I mean, out. And it did well to get another one, and which was also financially successful. Less so than the first, but still made money.
Yes, enough to where potentially they could do another one. It made about $130 million less, but it cost less than the first one, which
right
was kind of surprising. Yeah, there are discussions for a third movie, but who knows when and where.
Yeah, I think Ben Wheatley wants to do it, which I was like, I guess he had a good time, or at least enjoyed the paycheck.
Yeah,
he's now I can make 10 of my weird little movies.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Wheatley directed the second one. Yeah, Jason Statham saying, like, sure to whatever. But I will say,
I'm sure he has a great time. And I mean, I love Jason Statham. I always have. So I'm not, you know, upset about this one bit.
Did you have
let's get to our ratings.
Oh, I was going to ask.
Favorite part.
Favorite scene or favorite aspects?
I mean, obviously the beach scene is pretty great.
Pretty good. It's pretty good stuff.
The chaos caused by all of that. And but no, I already did mention, like, I love the sequence when the Meg swims up and the little girl is just kind of staring at it and, you know, does that one little bite and mm-hmm. can't break the glass and kind of swims away.
It's like, ow, and moves away.
Yeah, I really love that scene.
That is great trailer bait right there.
Throw well, that that's in the thing trailer is, it's, and boom. It's the, it was the sequence from the teaser, from the initial teaser. That was the sequence. And I'm like, I really kind of wish it wasn't there because, like, that's one of the best scenes in the movie.
It is showing. And yeah. If this was the Jaws trailer, it wouldn't be showing a whole bunch of Bruce, as it were.
Right. What about you?
I mean, there's a lot of pretty good action sequences besides the beach sequence at the end. I do feel like when they are hunting the first megalodon, there is some very good solid Jaws kind of homages thrown in there. But yeah, I don't know. That part is just so wild. There's like people just falling in the water all over the place, and then it's total chaos once the boat flips over. You know, that's some pretty intense stuff. I will say we didn't really talk about the Meg itself. Is they did design it to look very different from, I guess, kind of conceptual art of megalodons, and made it a little more monstrous looking. It's a shame we don't get more kind of like very good views of it, because they did a lot of work in making the model for the Meg. Even changed, you know, up some things to make it not look like a regular shark, like just a giant shark. So there's monster qualities to it. I wish they had gone the way of the book, where it was like an albino kind of great white shark, because you know, it just didn't have any light sources and the climas from. But yeah, the Meg looked good. Miles, this movie is a lot of fun. Like I said, watching Rampage just a few weeks ago, if you see this in theater, you're gonna have a blast. If you're seeing it on the small screen, it's still very good. It holds up. A Hollywood movie. This one has the Chinese film company kind of tacked on to it, but I think in a less noticeable way than Uprising. I don't know. I do feel like I can watch this movie again, but it's probably something I would have on in the background while I, like, you know, scrolled on my phone or played a video game, handheld video game or something. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. It was enjoyable enough experience. I think the first time I watched it, I would have given it an 8 out of 10, but on rewatch, it's just very good. What about you, Miles?
I'm still a big fan of this movie, despite it not being what I wanted it to be. Just being a fan of the book itself. And I think the one thing I have to say, it's just to say it, is this isn't really a kaiju film. This is in the American kind of tangential area that we've put stuff like Deep Rising and Tremors and whatnot, because this is just about an actual, you know, prehistoric animal, but basically a dinosaur. We kind of tricked ourselves and just did this because we like it.
Well, I will say,
and the sequel does have some kaiju stuff in it. You were correct. kind of.
The sequel is definitely more of a kaiju movie, but we will talk to about that in 5 years in kaiju world.
It is more of a kaiju movie, and that is something that we will definitely discuss. But this first one is, I mean, we're kind of watching it to get there. It is just about a giant shark. However, I'm never going to complain about a movie about a giant shark. I think this movie's a blast.
Can you imagine if we added every like Megalodon movie to this list? Because there's like 10 sci-fi original
quite giant a few. Shark I feel like there was a Megalodon TV movie that came out while they were still trying to get the Meg made. Like,
oh, I'm early sure
2000s or something.
I'm sure like, the Asylum made one along with their shark.
The Asylum made like 5 of them. We watched them all. Giant shark movies.
Mega shark.
No. There was like there was an actual TV movie, like I think a network movie called like Megalodon.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I do remember that.
And because they would do that every now and then, they would like, especially when like the asteroid movies were a big thing. There was one on NBC that was a 2-night event, and about a meteor hitting the earth. But yeah, I think the cast is great. I do think this movie has some pacing issues, and I do wish we got some better shots of the shark. I think the shark needs to be a little bit more front and center in some sequences, especially towards the end, because unlike Jaws, you know, this is a massive shark. We want to see, like, part of the draw of seeing this is not just seeing a shark, it's seeing the biggest shark of all time. And so getting to see some of that,
yeah, with other things giving it dimension and scale, like
you get dimension and scale, but also getting to see it in the $200 million range where it doesn't look like just this bad computerized thing like the Asylum movies, where it looks like a piece of clip art flipped around, like some that like looks like, oh, this is something that's taking space with these things, even though it's all, you know, effects, like it. Mm-hmm. You get the grand illusion. That's where the kind of theme park aspect of it comes in. Yeah, I have a great time with this movie. So for personal enjoyment, this does get an 8 out of 10 for me.
Okay. Yeah. I think the first time I saw it, definitely an 8 out of 10. And if you see this movie in the theaters, it could go up for its technical aspect. I thought the visuals had held up at the time, but rewatching it, there are some aspects that are pretty poor in retrospect. CGI Jason Statham kind of writhing around in the water looks a little cartoonish in parts, but
absolutely that I did clock.
But there's other parts where just the underwater CGI is so good, like the entire underwater biome that they made is amazing, and physical things that they built for the movie, like the Mana One sets, were really good. No complaints really about acting or directing. There's some pretty bad, you know, not sci-fi but science mumbo jumbo in the film, and like everyone really was believable kind of in their roles. I don't know, maybe not Ruby Soho. Ruby Rose was a little much for, I don't know, they probably needed a less good actress. She was like hamming it up in some parts in this a very small role in the movie. But yeah, the technical aspects, I think I'm giving it the highest on its technical, because yeah, at the end of the day, this is a very competent shark movie. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for the technical. What about you, Miles?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest complaint is kind of with the script itself. I think that there could have been better ways to kind of develop some of the characters and make them fit better. The whole subplot, like, yeah, Jonas has an ex-wife in this movie, and you wouldn't know it.
Oh, yeah, like, he saves her, and then she...
Except they tell you.
She is there for the movie, for the majority of the movie. And then
she plays wingman with a little girl to, like, hook him up with you. So, like...
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Like I said, the script is the weakest part of the movie, but, like, I mean, yeah, I love all the actors. I love Jason Statham, and he does exactly what he came to do. Like, honestly, makes a pretty great, like, you know, even though he's not doing his, like, typical action stuff, like, as the adventurer, I think he does a very, very good job here. Mm-hmm. The special effects, for the most part, are really, really solid. Yes, the CGI Jonas is a little ragdolly. But other than that, I mean, the shark still looks great. The underwater station looks fantastic. And the way they did a lot of the special effects for the beach sequence in the third act was pretty incredible. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of this is it's just so competently done and done in such a fun way that you can't be super mad at it. Like the dog swimming away from the shark and then getting doggy. Rescued by like, I mean, come on, like that. There's some great humor there. I loved so much of it. So yeah, 8 out of 10, easy.
What about its importance as a kaiju film? Where does it rate for you on the scale? You've already said kaiju adjacent. I don't know. I think if any megalodon movie, like I would put this one over Mega Shark series that we already
if I have to pick a megalodon movie to at least put in the conversation, it's gonna be this one for sure. Mm-hmm. But like it's still a megalodon movie, like it, and it's the same thing we said at the beginning of the show a few years back. Like it's the same reason we don't include Jurassic Park. It's that they're not kaiju, they are dinosaurs, and this is essentially a dinosaur, just a shark. And so for that purpose. But when you get to creatures that are so large, like the megalodon in these films are, it certainly deserves a part of the conversation. And for the same reason that we've done all the Asylum films, those are not kaiju films, really, even though they have the versus in every single one of them, except for maybe the Colossus.
But man, if you're at that point in the series, you don't even need to. Right. To continue on. So it's too much.
If I have to pick one of those, it's going to be this one. I am scoring it a little bit lower for it not really being a kaiju film, or even using some of the kaiju tropes. Even though I think there might be a couple callbacks to some kaiju movies here and there. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving it a very light 7 out of 10.
Okay. So, yes, it's not really a kaiju movie. I will say it is. Yeah. The last score, it's not as important to the kaiju canon as, you know, almost any other megalodon film. I think with Rampage, which had kind of a similar vibe to it, these movies are working as the popcorn action flicks first, and Rampage, a video game movie as well. This is more of a shark movie. It's more of a great, honestly, spiritual successor to the Jaws franchise. Then this is really a kaiju film. But like I said, I do think the second movie leans a little bit more into science fiction and those tropes. But still, this movie is very fun. I think the first time I watched it, like I said, I just considered it more of a kaiju movie because it does give the monster a scale that we don't get to see a lot. But unfortunately, that monster is very rarely seen in this film. It's really just in that third act, and they don't really use it to a great extent. It's mostly just destroying those little submarines, and we kind of already saw that. So yeah, I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for its importance. It's right down there with the Rampages and whatnot, which means my final score is about a 7. It's a soft 7. Yours is a soft 8. And I think that puts us at a 7 out of 10 for the podcast final. Yep, just about. Pretty solid 7. Which,
yeah, I'm happy with that.
About where I figured for this film. And that is also where we did Rampage, right? Rampage got a 7 out of 10 too. Which makes sense. Like I said, I'm interested to get on to Meg 2 The Trench because I want to know if it does hold up and if I'll enjoy it as much as I did the first time. I think I've only seen that movie one time. I was like, yeah, this is fun. This is they're just doing a little bit more than the first movie. And if they continue that trend, the Meg 3 will also be pretty wild. Hopefully we'll get some more crazy monsters. I'm hoping and praying, Miles, for Loch Ness Monster in that movie. You can do it. No one's telling you can't do it. Meg producers. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode, folks. You can reach out to us on Blue Sky at Kaiju Versus History or Kaiju Versus History at Gmail if you want to email us. Rate and review our show wherever you find it. Find us on the Cosmic Crit Discord. We've got a whole channel for Kaiju Versus History, and when we record this episode, there's a little news about Gamera Rebirth, and it's getting a a manga prequel. Is that right? As part of the Gamera 60th anniversary stuff going on this year? No movie.
No movie. Well, nothing we've heard of yet. There was some live action tease.
Nothing this year, I guess I should say. But they have announced
a new project is in development. Yeah. So I think it's the Gamma Rebirth, the manga adaptation. I'm not sure if it's
it is a different story, at least from the description.
I'm sorry, you're right. It is a prequel to the anime series. That's right.
Yeah, like ancient Gamera Guardian. So I'm pretty stoked. I would like to read it because I enjoyed this version of Gamera. Yeah. So yeah, find us.
You're a pretty big Gamera guy too.
I'm a big Gamera guy. That is going to do it for us. What are we working on next week? What we got cooking on next week's episode, Miles?
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're gonna catch you next week when we get our second Godzilla film of the year. A feat that's only happened a few times in the franchise's illustrious 70-year history. Will the final chapter in the anime trilogy be able to elevate Godzilla Earth, or is it going to get stuck in the dirt? Find out along with us for History versus Godzilla, the Planet Eater. Bum, 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 bum.